Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes, and I am joined by Mary Meyer, who's been a stranger around. We're glad that that you've come back in. It's good to see you again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Great to be here, Denny. Good to see you again.
Mary Meyer, of course, the faculty member at the University of Minnesota Extension, helping you out here on our Smart Garden Show. If you have, and I'm looking at the temperature, Mary, I just told Mary, it's now 1 below 0. Let's talk lawns and gardens.
It's January in Minnesota. Well, there is a lot we can talk about. I got two new garden books, actually from the library.
You did?
Yeah, but really amazing. It's a great time to think about your garden and plan what you can do. So inspiration, we're always looking for ideas. Coming up this week, tomorrow is a great day to go to the Arboretum. Not only is it free all January, but tomorrow especially is a winter market with 80 vendors.
Really? What's there?
80 vendors selling different, maybe some plants, but often food-related items or plant-related items. So, yes, we actually had a waiting list for vendors to get this event. So we'll be inside in the Great Hall. But all of January, you can come to the Arboretum and take a walk, have lunch in the cafe, see the conservatory. Great time to visit.
Well, there are a lot of outdoor activities, too, during the winter.
Yes, there are. Now, you can go snowshoeing, skiing. People have been asking about how our ski trails are. And, of course, they're kind of poor condition.
Yeah.
Until we get some snow. But the ski trails, you can walk them. You can walk 3 Mile Drive. You want to look at the website because there are some special days during the winter when we do tours or walks, nature walks, or tours in the sculpture garden in the wintertime. So there are a lot of special events. So check out the website and, think about coming tomorrow. The winter lights was, that was the lighting on at the Arboretum.
Spectacular.
It was a real family event. My grandkids did not want to leave.
Really? That's a good sign.
It was so fun. We did have a lot of people there. A lot of people. So that was a great event. But coming up in February is a flower show. The whole month of February, a beautiful flower show. Indoor, beautiful blooms with a nice theme and conservatory plants and so on. So that'll be fun.
That's next month. That's February.
Next month, that's February.
So but keep in mind, January's free.
January's free every day.
Yeah.
Every day. Right.
And to get to the Arboretum, for those that don't know?
It's west of the cities on Highway 5, just west of the intersection of 41 and 5.
Easy to find.
Easy to find. Well marked.
Yep.
Right.
If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question that you want to talk to Mary or send her a text, same number applies, 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. If you'd rather send a text message, same number. I'll tell you what, let's go to the phones. Lynn is calling in from Shoreview, I think. Lynn, you're on with Mary.
Yes, Mary, I was feeling bad last week when Julie had to get rid of her Meyer lemon tree because mine is just thriving. And before Christmas, I had two blossoms, and now I have a little lemon coming. But this week, the entire tree, it's about 2 feet high by 3 feet, is just full of clusters of blossoms, 15 to 20 clusters. But I'm seeing some little holes on some of the leaves. And when I looked closely, I see just a pinpoint of a little tiny white bug or insect, something. What do I do? I don't want to lose it.
Well, I would put it in the shower. I mean, I've heard Julie talk about that, and I have done that with my citrus and other plants. The first easiest thing is to put it in the shower or put it in your sink or somewhere that you can really spray it off with water and try to remove those. It sounds like that might be white flies that you're seeing. White flies are very tiny, or a scale insect. That's another thing that comes on citrus quite a bit. But I think you can take care of it with good inspection and cleaning it off with water. If that doesn't work, then I would try an insecticidal soap, which you can spray on the foliage as well. But I try water first. But Lynn, you're right. This time of year is when the citrus blooms. My Meyer lemons have ripe fruit, green fruit, and flowers on all at the same time. So it's an amazing plant, lots of fun to grow, especially in the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Julie, it's sad for Julie that she had to get rid of it.
I missed that. Yeah. Was it scale?
Yes.
She gave up on the scale.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing with the scale is that if you use the heavy-duty systemic insecticide, you'll get rid of the scale, but you can't eat the lemons for like a year.
Really?
Yeah, because it's internal. It takes a long time for that pesticide to work itself out. And so, yeah, I would say you could give it up if it wasn't a heirloom. Start over. Get another one.
Yeah. And I think it was Susie that called in the one time of something I didn't know, because we have a lemon tree at home that has four or five big, you know,
big
really
lemon.
Big
yeah,
lemons.
They're
but
normal size.
They're green. But Susie said, I believe, that they're still delicious, but you just can't use the zest when they're green.
Yeah, they're not going to be nearly as sweet.
Probably
I
not.
Think. Yeah, more a bitter taste to them. I've never tried eating any of the green ones.
She said they're just as good.
They're just as good. I can understand that because it's just a matter of sugar to starch ratio,
okay.
I think.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Lynn, thanks for the call. Lynn leaves that line open if you want to chat with Mary, 651-989-9226. Or again, if it's easier, send Mary a text, 651-989-9226. Well, here we are, the new year. Did you say, you started saying you got a couple of books?
I got a couple of books. So reading and getting inspiration from books is a great thing to do this time of year. If you go to, the Arboretum bookstore, any major bookstore, the Hort Society's website, you can find a lot of recommendations for books to read and look at, especially design books. The one I got from the library is called Gardentopia. Gardentopia, all one word. And it's a really interesting book. Every page has a different idea. Mm. So it's a very brief look at a lot of different ideas, like put a container in the middle of your perennial garden, or build steps with cedar logs. And then there's a section on color and things like that. So it's a really, you can quickly look and see what ideas could work for your own garden. The other thing that's coming up this week, this is for commercial businesses, but this is a big deal in the industry, is the Green Northern Expo. Is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at the Convention Center. So next week and the following week, when you listen to the show, we'll be talking to you about what's new and what we learned down there. It's about 6,000 people will come to the Convention Center and talk about plants. And we have people coming from all over the United States to speak at that. So that's a lot of fun. We get a lot of ideas and inspiration.
But this is generally open to the professional?
Yeah, it's really for professionals. I mean, anybody can go. You can go on the website in Northern Green and look it up. But it's really an industry-wide thing with a big trade show and the equipment, the plants. A lot of growers buy their plants in there and so on. So that's a lot of fun for us.
You know, you said as far as the books and reading, this is a perfect time of year to kind of kick back and plan for the spring and summer,
right,
and the fall for that matter. But the university's website is filled
with ideas. Yes. Gail Hudson is a great a video producer and writer, and she's the editor of our Yard and Garden News along with Julie Weisenhorn. So there's lots of ideas for resolutions for the new year. What are you going to do differently in gardening this year? It was interesting that a couple of our educators said they're scaling back. Their gardens have been too big. They couldn't take care of everything, and they're scaling back. And Ann Sawyer, bless her heart, she said, this is the second year in a row for my same resolution because I couldn't do it. I did it, but I didn't do it enough. I have to scale back further. So
even gardeners break their New Year's resolutions.
Yes, right. So the wintertime gives us a chance to refuel and rethink of ideas, but lots of ideas for new plants, resolutions for gardening, and what you're going to do different this year.
Hang on, Mary. We're going to take a quick break. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, yeah, we'll talk lawns. 651-989-9226. That's the number that applies both to the text and the phone calls for Mary. Smart Garden around every Saturday morning here on WCCO in the 8 o'clock hour. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show around every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Welcoming your lawn or garden questions. Mary Meyer from the U of M is with us this morning helping you out. So call in your question or text Mary your question. Either way, same number applies, 651-989-9226. Mary, we hadn't had a creeping Charlie question in so long, especially during the winter. But this one is, the texter wants to know, what is the active ingredient for treating creeping Charlie? And like you've always suggested, the fall is the best time for that.
Yeah, fall is the best time. So trichoplore is kind of a hard chemical name to say, but that's the one you want to look for in the active ingredient list. Usually what happens is if you find a broadleaf weed killer, two or three chemicals have a more effective or synergistic effect. So one chemical by itself, the common one, 2,4-D, is not as good as two or three chemicals. And trichoplore is one that has the best effectiveness. And in the fall, it's usually the best time.
You know, we talked over the last several months about all the damage that was done during last season to things like boxwood.
Right.
I hope that doesn't happen again.
We hope not. We hope not. A lot of that was due to, real fluctuation, but not enough snow cover. So plants were really exposed, not enough snow cover.
Then the cold, too.
And then, yeah, and extreme cold temperatures. So kind of typically cold, but with no snow cover. So hopefully, yeah, that won't happen again. We actually could use a little bit more snow cover, I think. It'd be good.
I'm looking at the forecast, Mary, and it looks like we have a chance tomorrow, maybe less than 1 inch, but then Sunday night, there's the possibility, at least here in the Twin Cities, of 1 to 2 inches more snow. So
that will help.
Need some cleaning up a little bit.
Right.
Some of that
cover up those plants.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
All right, call us or text us. We're talking lawns and gardens on our Smart Garden Show. Here is one. I am going, the texter. I'm going to try to grow dwarf fruit trees in my apartment. If I plant a Macintosh and a peach tree, do I need a pollinator for each?
Yes. This is going to be really difficult because producing fruit indoors is really, really difficult. Even in greenhouse conditions, this is a challenge. So indoors, unless you have excellent light conditions, and in our climate, you'd have to do lighting to make a 16-hour day all through the winter time. You'll get the plants to grow, but fruiting is a whole different ballgame. And then pollination, you know, you'll have to do the hand pollination unless you're going to put some bees in with your plants. So that's not likely. But two or more varieties, yes, certainly for the apples, you've definitely have got to do that. So that's a challenge. So if this works out for you, let us know.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a big deal. Now, dwarf is really very productive. So the size won't be an issue. It's the amount of light that's going to be an issue.
All right. Text or call your lawn or garden question for Mary. Here's another text. It says, I have 2-3-foot jasmine. I bought this summer for my daughter's wedding. I brought them in. One at my house, one of my daughters in the last couple of weeks, it seems to be shedding their leaves.
Yes.
Will it get new ones?
Hopefully. If you've got these in good light conditions, so we often see jasmine in conservatories. They have this wonderful fragrance, of course. They, again, need a huge amount of light. So as much light as possible that you can give them, a sunny south window all through the winter. And then right, moving them out in the summertime would be good. They will not live in our climate outdoors, but as a conservatory plant or as a house plant, I have not done that personally, but I know they're in a lot of conservatories, so good, really good light conditions.
Okay, very good. Here's a text that says, the city where we live, in this case, was Brooklyn Park. They removed our large boulevard ash tree late in November due to emerald ash borer. We're looking for recommendations for a replacement tree. The city forester recommends not planting in the exact same spot. When can we plant again, and what is a good replacement?
Well, in the springtime, you know, through the month of May and June is a really good time to plant. And I can list several plants here. There are 16 different ones the city of Plymouth is using for replacements. Some of them are disease-resistant American elms. There are different red oak. Is a northern red oak is another one that Plymouth is promoting and selling. Hackberry is a good one. Honey locust, a good one. But I would also recommend in the city of Brooklyn Park that you look at their city's website. Many of our cities give out plants for a fee. They will distribute bare root plants in the spring. So some cities are actually helping you to get the plants, the right good plants to put in for replacements of that. And on our website, we have replacement trees for the ash as well.
Yeah, if you need some ideas on trees and shrubs, and you've got tons of information.
Yeah, tons of information. So extension.umn.edu is a great resource for that.
All right. If you want to send in your text or call Mary, same number, 651-989-9226. Here's a text that says, I'm seeing seed catalogs that offer impatient seeds that claim to be downy, mildew resistant, or tolerant. What can you tell me about these impatient varieties? Do they perform as claimed in soil that has been unable to sustain impatience?
Yes, there are two new lines now that are out. One is called Beacon and one is called Imara. And they are disease resistant to the downy mildew, which has been so devastating. So, yes, they are both, I think they're both propagated by seed. So you can start these yourself, but these should be available now more and more. They were limitedly available last year, but this year, 2020, I expect those to be in garden centers. So the New Guinea impatiens doesn't get the powdery mildew, but our regular Walleriana impatiens does get powdery mildew. So these are the only two kinds I'm aware of that are available. But yes, that's a big improvement. Same thing with basil. Basil got downy mildew, and now their wonderful plant breeders have been able to release disease-resistant forms.
That's amazing.
Amazing, really.
It really
it's
is.
Wonderful. It's wonderful it happens so quickly that they can do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell you what, we need to take a quick break, but let's do that. And we inviting our listeners to join us with your text messages or phone calls, same number, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. We talk lawns and gardens in the 8 o'clock hour here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And we are back talking lawns and gardens, welcoming those kind of questions from you, either by phone or by text. Mary Meyer from the U of M is in studio helping you out today. So call Mary or send Mary a text. Same number again, 651-989-9226. All right, Mary, let's go back to the phones. I believe Barry there in Ham Lake has been waiting. Barry, what's your question for Mary?
Well, we bought our balsam fir Christmas tree about 8 weeks ago, and it's still very, very happy. It's not dropping leaves. As a matter of fact, it's got hundreds of buds, at least an inch long, and I'm wondering how long we can expect this to last. I mean, it's gorgeous. I'll hang up and listen.
All right, very good.
Wow, great. Good for you, Barry. So what this says to me is that the tree you got was probably freshly cut when you put it into your home. I assume it's in your home. And maybe the temperatures there are cooler, which is great in helping it. Firs are really a kind of the number one tree now that people are using because they don't drop their needles as much, and they smell nice. So lots of Fraser firs or balsams are the big sellers. So I would say, you know, ideally you might have 4 weeks. That's probably where we are now, close to that. I don't know when you put yours up, but 4 to 6 weeks at the most. But at some point, the tree will stop taking up water and it will start to decline. So cool conditions probably have helped a lot, but great. Good for you. That's testimony to the length of a live tree. Thank you for that.
Talk about the exception. Huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Right. Well, and also Barry didn't say, but he probably had it in water, and it was taking up water. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if it's freshly cut, it will continue to take up water and take a lot of water up and still be pliable and alive.
I think Barry said they got it 8 weeks ago.
Oh, 8 weeks? Good for him. That's wonderful. I thought he was going to ask, how can I keep it alive? Or how can I propagate it so I have another, with all the buds on it and everything. But very healthy tree, great, good plant, good one to begin with.
Thanks, Barry. Barry leaves that line open, 651-989-9226. Texas, same number, as they say. All right, let's see. Here's one. Good morning, says, we lost 150 very mature trees on our Wisconsin lake property in July. The forest floor was covered in trillium. I know they like shade. Will they die back with no tree cover? Not sure what that is.
I don't think so. I think that
what
they...
What is that, Mary?
Trillium?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a beautiful wildflower. T-R-I in the beginning of that name. It has three leaves. It has three petals. It has three stamens. So trillium, a beautiful wildflower. It's white and really quite large when it blooms. So showy. No, I would hope for the best, even though you do have a lot more sunlight in there. What's going to happen? You're going to find there are some other understory plants that are going to pop up and start growing that will probably provide shade in just a couple of years. So that's wonderful. How lucky.
Yeah, I should say.
Yeah.
All right, here's another text Mary just came in. Does composted soil hold onto any diseases which can be transported when used in a garden?
Ideally, no. Ideally, compost is high enough temperature that lots of weed seeds, diseases, and so on are killed. This happens in municipal compost sites where it's big and the volume is good and the mixing is there and it's in the sun and it can get hot. In home compost in Minnesota, it doesn't usually get hot enough. So we can actually perpetuate diseases, and weed seeds can live in our home compost unless you've really got ideal conditions. So the answer is kind of gray. It depends.
It depends. Depends.
Yeah.
651-989-9226. You want to call in or text in your lawn or garden question to Mary. That is the number to use. All right, we started off the show talking about, here we are, New Year's resolutions.
Resolutions,
and
yes.
Wintertime, I'm looking at the forecast. It's cold. We're thinking about spring and lawns and gardens, not to rush the season. But what else do you do? What about, you were mentioning something about houseplants that's kind of booming.
So, houseplants, this is a big, big trend now. Younger people, which is wonderful, love houseplants. So lots of younger people that have apartments, maybe not have a home where they can garden, are turning to houseplants. And if you want to hear some fun titles, yes, you should try Googling plant parenting. Plant, P-L-A-N-T, plant parenting, how to raise a plant, a new plant parent. So these are all book titles that are out there, and they are for people who haven't really raised houseplants before. And then if you are an Instagram or social media person, you can see on Instagram, especially, pictures of houseplants. One individual plant, there will be a following for a Monstera. Monstera is a big, big leaf that has a lot of lobes to it. And if you have a variegated Monstera, it's a huge, huge desirable plant. So it's really interesting to see how popular these plants are, and arranging them indoors or finding the right ones indoors is really amazing. Now, some of these plants are not, they're slow to grow, and they're vegetatively propagated, and they might take 10 or 15 years
really?
To get the size
wow.
that you see in these pictures. So that's why, they can be quite expensive. So if you go to garden centers this time of year, you can see a huge variety of indoor plants. Used to be that most of the popularity was around succulents. And they are still popular, but now this is broadened out to many different kinds of houseplants. So We have a lot of information on the Extension website on how to care for houseplants, but it's a really fun thing to go to Bachman's or, you know, Otten Brothers, any of the garden centers this time of year and see the houseplants that they have. And I have to say that even some of the big box retailers like Home Depot will have amazing houseplants. The only thing is you want to get there where the truck is pulling in, because then the plants come right off the truck from Florida and you can give them a shot in your house. Otherwise, in many of our big box retailers, there's no greenhouse there this time of year. And those plants are sitting in the store and they're sitting in under shelving, even waiting for somebody to buy them. It can be quite dark. So the trauma of the shipment from Florida, sitting in a dark warehouse-like setting, and then finally coming into your house can be traumatic. So oftentimes our local garden centers have a very good conditions and greenhouses to grow these plants in. But it's amazing. If you want to see great houseplants, just go to the garden centers this time of year.
What was the name of that book, Plant Parenting?
Plant Parenting, yes. There are three, actually. Plant Parenting, New Plant Parent, and How to Raise a Plant.
Well, good for them.
Lots of fun.
I think that's great.
Oh, yeah, it's lots of fun. And it's wonderful for young people to try raising plants, because sometimes the plants are the problem. They're more difficult. And people think, oh, it's me. It's me. I couldn't do it. But there are some that are much easier than others.
Good point.
That's how it goes.
651-989-9226. Let's go to the phones. Melissa's calling from Prescott, I believe. Melissa, good morning.
Good morning. I am a beginner gardener. I've only been at it a couple years. And I understand that there's certain plants that I plant that will draw the Japanese beetles in. But they have just decimated some of my hard work. And we have a dog, and so I don't want to spread some of the chemicals on the lawn. It seems that using the traps draws them in. What can I do to keep these buggers from my hard work that is just so beautiful and makes me want to plant more?
Well, you're right, Melissa. There are certain plants that really draw them in. A lot of plants in the rose family, so roses, the raspberries, the fruit trees, grapes, and so on, are things that Japanese beetle love. So those are the prime ones. So if you can avoid those, do that. The other thing is the first beetles that you see, and we will start to see these around June 25th or typically the 4th of July. The first beetles that you see, if you can remove those, that can actually help in cutting down further beetles coming in, because the first ones tend to put out the signals, hey, guess what? There's a great thing going on here, and attract others. So that's why the traps don't work. So try to removing the first ones you can see, and in the soapy water, just brushing them or holding that soapy water underneath where the beetles are and knocking them off into the water. That hand collecting them can make a difference in the beginning. The time of day, early in the morning, they tend to be sluggish and not as active. If you can remove them early in the morning, that's another good tip.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thanks, Melissa. Appreciate the call. And Melissa leaves that line open for yours at 651-989-9226. Same number for your text question as well. Speaking of text, here's Juan Mary. I was given a rosemary plant for Christmas, and it's all dried up. I don't think I kept the soil moist enough. Can it be revived?
Well, maybe. If it's so dry that when you touch it, you can see the needles, the little leaves fall off and so on, then it is probably dead. Rosemary is a perennial in warmer climates, and you can see if there's still some life to it by cutting the stems and see if any of it is green. I find rosemary is quite a difficult plant to grow indoors. It doesn't seem to like drying out indoors, when yet it's a dry land plant outside in the summer and in soils where we plant it. So it's pretty tricky to get it going indoors. You might be able to find some of it that's greener or better than others and still use that for culinary purposes. But it's I have killed several rosemary plants indoors.
You admit that.
I shouldn't say that. I should say the rosemary has died for me indoors. I didn't kill it. But it is more temperamental than you'd think.
A text, I know we have to break here in a minute, a quick one. But a texter wanted you to mention again, if you could, even though it's for professionals, the convention center.
Yeah, it's called Northern Green. Northerngreen.org, I think, is the website. And you can look at that. You can see the schedule for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, what's going on.
Is it 1 week or 2 weeks?
It's 3 days.
3 days, period.
Yeah, okay. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And, there are different rates for different people, for members, for students, for non-members, and so on. Yeah, anybody can go if you pay the registration fee. And, and if you're interested in getting into the business, you want to see what's going on, maybe you want to start working in horticulture or just check things out, yeah, anybody can go to it.
All right, good. We may remind you of that before you take your leave today, too. We'll take this break, Mary. So hang on. 651-989-9226 is the phone number. It's also the text number, 651-989-9226. And again, good morning. Welcome to this portion of our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota helping you out this morning. Glad to have Mary back here. We have callers, Mary. We have texters. So let's put you back to work. Let's see who's first. Georgiana is calling in from Lakeville. Georgiana, thank you. What's your question?
My question is about the Japanese beetles. I was surprised that you took another question in January, but that's fine. I'd like to know what advice the University of Minnesota, Extension, farm agents, whatever, give to commercial growers of crops like beans, soybeans. I have lost all my roses, all my grapes. Last year, they turned my rhubarb, my green beans, my zinnias into doilies. Do you tell the commercial grower to get up in the morning early and wander around with a bucket of soapy water? Or is there another effective treatment for getting rid of this invasive species?
So, usually, Georgiana, I don't give the recommendations to commercial farmers, but certainly there are a lot of people in Extension that do, and that's a pesticide recommendation. So there are chemicals, very effective chemicals that will kill Japanese beetles, timing of those. I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's actually a I'm not aware of a biological control pesticide. There might be one of those. But the other traditional pesticides certainly are part of the recommendations. I know that there's an article for commercial people about the grapes and Japanese beetles. There's some exclusion techniques that other countries I know in Asia use an exclusion technique where there's a covering that keeps the beetles out. But those recommendations are going to be on our website for commercial growers.
Oh, okay.
So that you should be able to find those.
And the website is, for those that don't know?
So it's extension.umn.edu. You can search Japanese beetles, and you can also search something like Japanese beetles grapes, Japanese beetles soybeans, and look for commercial recommendations there.
All right. Thank you, Georgiana. Tony's calling in from Minneapolis this morning. Tony, what is your question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering about using essential oils to get rid of pests, especially on potted plants. I've had some good luck with getting rid of aphids, for example, on a potted tomato plant. And what I did is I just put the peppermint oil in the water and I put it in the base of the plant. And poof, the next week, all the aphids were gone. I wonder if there's any research on using those oils.
The most common oil is what we call a dormant oil, or it's actually an oil spray that you put all over the plant that makes a covering on the insect that will actually kill the insect by kind of suffocation. The essential oils that you're talking about, I am not aware of research that's been done with those. That's really interesting. All of the pesticides recommendations that we make, it's extremely important that the label recommendations are what is followed. So what's on the label to use the recommendations for the rates, the timing and application that's indicated on the label. But that's an interesting thing to look up. I think I'm going to actually
a little research, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
There's a line open. Thank you, Tony. 651-989-9226 if you want to call in or text in your lawn and garden question. We still have time, so don't wait. We have a few minutes left in the show to grab your texts or your phone calls. Here's a lawn question, Mary, from the text line. They want you to explain, like, the number of applications of fertilizer slash weed killer on lawn spring through fall. What is the process?
We actually have a calendar for that. Julie
That's
developed
right.
with the Turf Guys a lawn care calendar by a date so that you can look at it. So the minimal maintenance lawn is a one fall fertilizer application, possibly a weed control application in the fall also if you need that. Sometimes two applications of fertilizer in the fall and sometimes a third one in the springtime. So it really depends on the level of maintenance that you want to do in your lawn, the level of weed control and pesticide use that you want to undertake. So there are organic methods that you can use as well, organic pesticides, but it's kind of from a high to low maintenance aspect of what you expect from your lawn, what you want from your lawn. But you can look that up at the extension.umn.edu. Click on garden, or you can search for lawn care calendar.
All right, very good. Yeah, yeah. That's right. I'm glad you reminded us about Julie's input there. 651-989-9226. Is it also a good idea, not this time of year, but to get a soil test from the U?
Yes, the soil test is great, especially if you've never done that, to understand what the pH is of your soil and what the nutrient levels are. You might have quite high nutrient levels. That's not unusual to have enough potassium and phosphorus in your soil that you don't need. The fertilizer is not a limiting factor. So we have wonderful soils in Minnesota, so a soil test is really great. You know, that reminds me, that lawn care calendar by date. This is, I'm surprised we haven't had a poinsettia question yet.
That's true.
On how to take care of my poinsettia. But Leonard Perry, one of our colleagues up at the University of Vermont, actually put together a calendar for poinsettia care by date, by holiday date.
Wow.
And he tells you what to do throughout the year, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, etc., to get your poinsettia to rebloom. So it's really, that's great. Julie put that together with her poinsettia care, and it's listed there for what to do by the holidays. And I think that's interesting, that is, the holidays will remind us to do plant care or lawn care.
Or
so
lawn
that's
care,
a cool
sure.
idea. Right. Yeah.
Great. Back to the phones we go. Eleanor is calling from Little Canada. Eleanor, what's your question?
Hi, I have a calla lily I got last year, and it's down to like having three leaves or stems in it, and I was wondering, how do I take care of it to keep it growing?
Well, most of the time calla lilies are planted outside in the summer, and then in order for them to live through the winter, you have to dig them up, either keep them growing or keep the bulbs, the tuber-like roots, in some peat moss or something, kind of keep it dormant and then plant it out again. So I would encourage you, Eleanor, to keep it in the best light that you have and put it outside in the summer. I would even think about taking it out of the container and planting it right in the soil in kind of a semi-shady area, because I think it'll grow and do much better in light conditions outdoors in the summer.
All right. Very good. Let's talk to, let's see who's, I want to grab this text about the Arboretum. Do you know of any seminars on veggie gardens during the month of January at the Arb?
I'm not certain about January, but I'm sure there's something coming up sometime this year.
Check the
2020.
Website.
Yeah, check the website. So events and classes is there. Then there's all sorts of different categories, photography, artists, and then gardening is there. There are a lot of classes coming up, so I'm sure there's something on vegetable gardening.
Sure. Charlotte's on the phone calling from Luck, I believe. Charlotte, you're on with Mary.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have an orange tree. It's only about a foot high. I bought last fall, and it was full of blossoms. It ended up with just one orange on there, and when it got a color to it, it fell off. Now that the leaves are all kind of dull, and I'm losing some leaves, but it makes no indication of growing at all.
Yeah, so do you think this is a regular orange, like a large orange, or was this
it's a regular orange I bought from, it's supposed to be a houseplant.
Yeah, so a regular size orange is a tough houseplant to grow. It needs a lot of light, more so than the Calamondin orange, which is a little baby orange. It's a Calamondin's like the size of a golf ball or less. A Calamondin is kind of a weedy tree, and you can grow that as a houseplant. That's the one that I have that's 60 years old. But a regular orange is a challenge. I don't know. Now, I'm sure somebody has done this. Maybe a caller will call in. I don't know someone who's been successful in getting a regular-sized orange to fruit in Minnesota indoors. So that's a tough plant to grow, but it comes down to really, really high light. So as best light as you can give it, and put it outside in the summer where it's either in the shade or in a porch. So really good light and outside in the summer.
All right, thanks, Charlotte. There's a text that says this, Mary. I received a calendula plant 2 years ago. It was blooming beautifully. Any suggestions how to get it to bloom again? Tried putting it in darkness and taking it out. No bloom, no blooms at all.
I think calendula or calankawe is more of a cold, loving plant, cool temperatures. So I would try, if you have a cool room, the short days, maybe, but I think the cool temperatures might do it more. So if the plant is healthy, I would try to giving it like a month of really cool temperatures and see if that will help it. A fertilizer would be the other thing. So the liquid fertilizer, dilute solution every week or two.
How about how to take care of a large clivia plant?
Oh, my gosh. I have a clivia growing, and it hasn't bloomed yet. I keep waiting for it to bloom. So clivia,
you can relate to this.
I know. I'm waiting. Clivia is a great house plant. This is one I know a lot of people have gotten this to bloom indoors. It's kind of a big, like, lily-like looking, strap-like leaves. And then the flowers are orange or yellow in a big cluster of plants. You see it in a conservatory a lot. I think they like to be pot bound. They do like quite a bit of water and regular fertilizer. So year round, I'm putting some fertilizer on mine and just as much light as you can. And I as long as it's growing in green, I'd give it dilute fertilizer once a week.
Excellent. Mary, it's good to see you again. We're out of time.
Great to be here, Denny.
See you in another week or two, I hope.
Yes, I hope so.
Good deal. Mary Meyer from
U
of M.
My pleasure.
What is that website, FEU?
Oh, extension.umn.edu. Tomorrow is the winter market at the Arboretum.
All right, get out there. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks very much, Mary.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.